Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Trinity Talks. My name is Kyla.
I'm Jordana.
And I'm Bill.
And we are here for the last time to wrap up our series about the seven deadly sins. And we are going to be talking about the last sin, or at least the last in our particular list. I don't know if they're really ranked in any kind of way.
No.
But the last one on our list is gluttony. So let's start by just talking about what is gluttony. I think when we think about it sort of commonly, we think about it as, you know, excessive eating.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's definitely part of it.
Yep.
But are there other things that sort of fall within what gluttony is?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking more of an excessive obsession with food.
Okay.
Yep. Right? And that can take various forms.
Sure.
A sort of unhealthy way in which food ends up being the place for your ultimate satisfaction or for
right.
your fulfilling of more than nourishing and needs, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say that it can manifest in very different ways, not
mm-hmm.
necessarily only excessiveness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'd like to say that I did an extensive word study, and I kind of dived
yes.
into the
yes.
into the etymology of the word gluttony, and like looked at the roots in the Greek and the Hebrew,
sure.
oh,
and
wow.
just kind of dug
Damn.
Into that and stuff. Yeah. But I just did a Google search.
Okay,
okay.
And what does the almighty Google have to say?
And the Google search said the definition as it relates to the seven deadly sins is excessive indulgence mm-hmm. and overconsumption mm-hmm. of anything to the point of waste, particularly food and drink.
Right.
And I think there's a bunch to unpack there. I mean, it's
yep.
It's an indulgence,
yep.
of course, but it's an overindulgence or an excessive mm-hmm. indulgence and a consumption. I think we can talk about that. But it says of anything. It's an overindulgence or consumption of anything.
Okay.
Right? It does
yep.
say particularly food or drink.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's generally it can be anything. I mean, we could talk about a gluttony or a gluttonous attitude over social media or something
sure.
like that, right?
Right.
But it does say particularly food and drink. And then the next line it says it's considered a sin when it leads to a lack of control over one's relation with food
right.
or causes harm to the body. And I think that is two more key points, right? Where it says, where it's about a lack of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that really kind of strikes home. That's an important thing to me, is kind of having control over myself. And so anything that causes a lack of control is concerning.
Right.
And then it's also about harm.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
yeah,
when
yeah.
we think about that, like how does gluttony relate to harming ourselves or harming others.
Right.
So that's an interesting thing.
Ooh,
to think
yeah.
about
and
well.
To think about like harming others as well. I think that's an interesting mm-hmm. dynamic to sort of pull yep. into it. Right. Because we think of, at least I think of gluttony as a very sort of personal
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so if it all sort of revolves around this relationship with food.
Yes.
Right. And so I think maybe for us to really fully understand what gluttony is, maybe we need to understand like what our relationship to food is, right? So if you were to think about maybe the opposite of gluttony, or like what a healthy relationship with food looks like what is that?
beats me.
No, I think there is information there on that, right? We know of cultures that have healthier relationships with food. They're eating real food. They're
right.
eating it
what
in
do you
community.
Mean by real food?
So food that is not necessarily full of synthetic.
Okay.
Right.
Sure. So like whole
overly,
foods or
yeah,
yeah
things
yeah.
that are grown locally sometimes, but
sure.
even if it's coming from elsewhere, we're talking about something that is closer to where it has or how it's been grown, as
right.
opposed to where you've got a range of stabilizing synthetic
right.
chemicals
okay.
put there. Now those can have benefits,
sure.
right, in different ways, but in general, what you've got is food that is very often prepared more
yep.
intentionally, eaten
yep.
within a community,
yep.
Eaten because it's eaten in a community, it's it's regulated inherently, right?
Yeah.
Because it means that you're waiting for people to come together when you eat. You're not simply going off by yourself and gorging or something like that.
Yeah.
And so you've got a lot of cultures that actually do, I think, have rhythms of preparing, eating, and then eating in community that allow for inherently less consumption, slower consumption, healthier eating, right? And so we can look at those as ingredients in what it might be to eat more healthily. And I think, so, you know, and within a Christian framework too, we recognize food is good, right? It's a gift. It was in the garden, eat of the trees in the garden, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we focus on the one tree that was the was prohibited, but every other tree was available to
eat anything you want
over here. And so it's a good gift that you can receive and enjoy with people and, you know, be a place for creativity and and so much that is good.
Mm-hmm.
I think and it can go out of whack, right?
Yeah. I think for my family, the transition to healthy eating involved more kind of moving from food in a box to fruits and vegetables and actual ingredients that go into making a meal, as opposed to buying a meal in a box. You're buying the things that you prepare to make the meal,
right?
And often, I think most often, that's healthier eating than just buying products. And I think I was told it was probably Natalie that told me this a little while ago, but it was just if you buy most of your stuff at the grocery store along the outside wall of the grocery store.
Then shop along the edges.
Yeah, shop along the edges. Yeah, that's exactly. And don't go down the aisles. Aisles are bad. Just shop along the edges, and that's more of where the kind of the healthier food items are.
Yeah.
You know, fruits and vegetables and meat and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking about a healthy relationship with food in terms of like healthy foods, but I think it also extends a bit further.
Yeah.
Right. Like when I think about. I grew up in a rural area where there was like lots of farming and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think we ever in my life bought apples from the grocery store because there was someone in my church who like had an apple orchard and just like gave apples to everybody in the church. Right. And so we knew exactly where those apples came from.
Yes.
Right. And I can think of the same thing. Like every summer we went and picked our own strawberries and blueberries and things like that.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, my mom would make jam. So like the first time that I had jam that was like not homemade, I was like, this is just too sweet. It's just not good.
Right.
Right. So just all like it's the food that we eat, but it's also like the connections to the land, to the people, like all of those things, I think also help constitute a healthy relationship to food because it has a story.
Yeah. I mean, I was just reflecting on growing up in India, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Mumbai and we didn't snack. Like at the time, it wasn't a snacking culture.
Okay.
So we would have breakfast in the morning, go off, like I'd be off to school. I would have my lunch packed. I'd have that. Come back, have, you know, play a bit, go.
Yeah.
Like there was dinner. But there wasn't any snacking in between. And that was partly like just how you did things. Like even dessert, it's not really a huge dessert culture. So dessert was only for feasts.
Okay.
Right. So we didn't even have dessert every day.
Yeah.
Chocolate was only on special occasions, was super expensive. And cookies, it's not a cookie culture. Right. And so cake was only for birthdays. Right. And so you inherently just ate less, ate nourishing food. And ate at specific times. And so, that was just not like a pantry the way I have now with a few snacks stuck there for me to snack at other times. It just wasn't there. Whereas all of that, I think, crept into my life once we came to Canada, right? Because it's everywhere all the time.
To think about North American culture, you know, you've lost that connection to food, where that's part of a holistic, healthy understanding of food and where it comes from, and all that kind of stuff, and we've also kind of misplaced the where food is in our life. Where I think for a lot of us, where food is, we're trying to make ourselves feel better as opposed to nurturing our bodies.
Right.
We're trying to kind of feed you know, emotionally, we're trying to mm-hmm. kind of fill that hole with food as well, which isn't which is not healthy.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so if a healthy vision for food is healthy foods, a connection to land, a sense of like moderation of some kind,
community with other people.
Yeah. So then, as Bill sort of started to take us into, like, how does an unhealthy relationship with food sort of show up in our culture today? And maybe we can draw some connections there to gluttony, if we understand gluttony in a holistic sense of, like, an unhealthy relationship to food. Yeah, so you've already said, you know, like, the boxed mm-hmm. food. And yeah, I think there is something to that, the, like, convenience of, like, whether it's, you know, fast food in a sense of, like, going out to a restaurant for fast food, or even, like, fast food, like, here's a frozen meal that'll take you two minutes to heat up, right? Like, that, I think, destroys some of that connection.
Yeah, it destroys so many connections. It destroys because you don't know where it comes from. You don't know how it's processed.
Yeah.
There isn't the sort of intentionality that comes from preparing food. And I say this not as if I've got it all figured out. Like, I struggle, you know, mm-hmm. and so many pressures, I think, mm-hmm. we have here in North America that make it hard to have a healthy sort of let's sit down and eat and connect in family mm-hmm. each day, right? Yeah. I mean, I come home from work, I'm tired. Like, it's easy to reach for something that's already prepared if I haven't been intentional about cooking the day before or 2 days before, right? Yeah. Stuff like that, where you're consistently having to prepare. But yeah, I think, you know, so the industrialization of food, as we talked about, mm-hmm. destroys that connection.
Yeah.
The ways in which, when industrialization happens, so many of the foods we prepare are prepared are empty calories,
right?
So what it actually does is fuel then. Like, because you've eaten things that are not necessarily nourishing, your body needs it, and you feel hungry more often.
Right.
And so it, you know, so it's not, it's like a lot of ways in which our cultures, the way it creates food products can feed, it can make it more difficult for people to actually then have a healthier relationship with food, right? Mm-hmm. So it's our pressures on our time, you know, not having time, but also the fact that even if we do go buy food, some of that isn't really good, and then it can fuel urges and hunger.
It fuels a hunger that then, like, more naturally leads to overconsumption because the things that we consumed aren't nourishing.
That's right.
That's when you're just talking about food itself.
That's just the food
When you're talking about people that are eating food in place of, or while they're hungering for something food, they're hungering for something else.
Right.
Then that's a whole other. So not only is the food, the quality and the of the food that we're eating not nourishing our bodies in a physical sense, but we're grabbing for that food to try and trying to fill a different hunger that food can't fill either.
Yes.
So I mean, there's just a lot of want, and that's left at the end of that equation.
Yeah, so in the sermon about gluttony, Rob made this sort of joke about the cardiogastric canal, I think he called it, which is like, you know, this connection between our stomach and our heart, that when we're feeling a longing for something else, for God, for connection, like when we're feeling lonely or we're feeling stressed, we're, even though those aren't like physical hunger pains, we try to fill that.
Yeah,
food.
Often. We reach to soothe, with food, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. The other thing that I think about in terms of, you know, Western culture's relationship to food is, you know, back to at the beginning, you said that, you know, gluttony is about harming ourselves, but also harming other people, right? And so there's this connection to then, like, food waste and overindulgence in a world where other people don't have enough food. Right. So, can you just reflect on, like, what that looks
like? I mean, that's an important part of this discussion for me, because kind of my background, my work background is working with people that are hungry, that are and that go without, working with homeless populations and underprivileged populations. And it's a real issue with having enough food to for themselves and for their families. And when I see other people in our culture, in our community, that have enough, that have excess, mm-hmm. that waste food, and there just doesn't seem to be that care and concern for the community overall. I see that as a waste. That's a tragedy. It just kind of gets my blood burning a little bit, right? That I know anger was last week, but it just there's an injustice there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is solidly around food and making some of us kind of not caring, not realizing maybe that everyone doesn't have what we have.
Right.
And there's some people that go without. And mm-hmm. The reality is if we shared, everyone would have enough. Yeah. But we don't. But that's part of the problem, is that we don't have that same sense of community, that sense of other.
Yeah.
To be able to kind of understand how we can, instead of being part of the problem, we can be part of the solution.
Yeah. 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 For sure. Yeah, which is why, like, then I think about eating together.
Yes.
Is such an important, like, move to sort of counteract that, right? Because it's inviting people into this table of stuff that I have, like, quite literally.
Yeah.
Right? And saying, okay, there is enough. Like, I can invite more people into this. I don't need to, like, hold on. Yeah.
Yeah. When I was working at the dam years ago, mm-hmm. We would do weekly, family meals or community dinners with the youth that were coming to the drop-in, and there would be 15 or 20 of us, some staff, volunteers, and youth. And we would we'd make the meal together, and we would sit down and eat the meal together. And I was just amazed, when we were sitting down talking while we're eating, and youth would be reflecting, and like, this is so nice. We should do this. I should do this at home with my family.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, you don't?
Right.
No. Yeah. Like, we've never sat down like this never. I'm like, how is that possible? Right? Yeah. Oh yeah. When I go home, I just grab something and I sit in front of the TV or go to my room and my dad doesn't come home until late whatever. There's all sorts of stories, right?
Yeah. But
the thing is that family meal, which I guess at some point was a much more common thing for everyone to come together. And it's not just about the food and sharing a meal or even making it together, which is also great.
Yep.
But the time that you have together to talk about your day and to find out what's going on and to chat and catch up and all that kind of stuff. That's there's so many families that are missing out on all of that. To the detriment of each and every family, and the detriment of our community and probably our culture.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So in light of all of that, in light of this sort of good, healthy relationship to food and this other sort of relationship that has all of these tensions, gluttony, we talk about it as a sin, which means that we presume that there's some spiritual impact in all of this as well. So what is the spiritual impact of gluttony, and is it different somehow than just the disconnection and the overeating? And
yeah, I think just given where our conversation has been, I would say it's the space where food is not appreciated as the gift and as the place of communion that it is. So that can happen in, by grabbing too much, right? Where it's just all for me, right? Not this good thing you receive with others. And at the same time, it can manifest in so many different, like not caring enough, even, not being intentional about eating. And so it can also manifest in damaging ways on the other side, where you just don't care, where you're, you're not, as you said, Bill, people are not necessarily getting together anymore to eat together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so where food before, if somebody was preparing it and people were eating together, you have that connection. Now that's just let go. It's not even recognized. And so I think gluttony can be this odd space where you can have too much or too little. Mm-hmm. You can go into cycles of too much and too little.
Right.
And you just end up having this really unhealthy space where you're willing to sacrifice or not put attention to, you know, those elements of its goodness and its opportunity for connection that is sort of built into what it might be when it's eaten well, right?
Sure.
Or taken in well.
Yeah,
That's sort of where I would say that spiritual dimension is. You're willing to sacrifice really important things for shallower or reductive view of just consumption.
Yeah, and sort of recognizing like it's hard to figure out like how to put food in its proper place, right? Because you don't want food to be like way up here where like it's food and God, right? But you also don't want food to be just a tool.
Yeah.
Right? Like if we're overeating or if we're eating like for emotional reasons or other sort of fulfillment reasons, then like food becomes a tool to like comfort.
Yes.
Right? Or if we're like looking at like diet culture, food becomes a tool to like shape our bodies in a particular way.
Yeah.
And we don't want that.
Yeah.
Right? So we need to sort of put food back in its proper place somewhere in the middle there where it is a good gift from a good God.
Yeah.
Yep.
But it's not God.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think food is there is a spiritual component to food. And I think that's kind of why gluttony is included in the seven deadly sins. Like you said, I think it's and what Rob said in the sermon about, or making that connection between our heart and our stomach, I think is really important. And I'm reflecting on that because I think a lot of the misplaced desire around food, you know, comes from us thinking that when we're hungry, it's our stomach talking to us and not our heart talking to us. And this goes back to, I think, the first podcast that we did together on the first deadly sin, when we were talking about believing as one of the building blocks of growing up well, right? Just saying that God has created us to believe that's a built-in thing. So we have a desire to believe in something, and so we choose to, you know, believe in a lot of things, like have that something take that place of belief.
Right.
And in some cases, you know, people, you know, worship food and they, you know, and it's too something, it's too much. It's, you know, it's too fancy.
Yeah.
Like what Rob was saying, what is it?
Yeah.
Or people are too picky. Right. But they, like you said, they place, food in an inappropriate place in between them and God, where food becomes their idol, becomes their God.
Yeah.
And so God did create us to believe, but he created us to believe in him. So we said way back in that first session, we said that hole in our heart, not our stomach, but that hole in our heart is a God-shaped hole.
Yeah.
And when we try to fill it with food and with drink in this gluttonous kind of way, it's never going to fully satisfy.
Yeah.
Right? And the only satisfaction, thank you. The only satisfaction that we will find is if we put God in that God-shaped hole.
Yeah.
And the food has a place.
Yeah.
Right. I think there's nothing wrong with enjoying food and certainly enjoying food in community with family in groups and stuff. But it can't take the place of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was, as you were talking there, I was reflecting on, in scripture, Jesus is called like a glutton and a drunkard. Jesus like went out and partied.
Yes.
Jesus like had meals with people. So like, obviously food is good. Food is, I think, an important part of the kingdom of God.
It is. Yep.
In its proper place.
Yeah.
Right.
And sometimes that includes feasting. And sometimes that includes, you know, extravagant, fancy food.
Yep.
But it also includes the everyday.
Yep.
It also includes the coffee.
Some of the analogies of heaven is a banquet, is a feast.
Right. It is. Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's, so, you know, that's good times, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
sounds good to me.
But it does feel right. Like when you think about, you know, the fact that feasting is, you know, Jesus is feasting with people.
Yep.
And he's receiving their hospitality and creating connections.
Yep.
Or there are times of feasting,
yep,
right, that are quite distinct from every day.
Yep.
Or distinct from times of fasting as well.
Sure.
Whereas I think we do live in a culture which thinks that every day should be a day of a feast.
Right.
Like, yeah. And so I think that's why the excess sometimes comes in. Every day you've got to eat well. Every day you have the right to have a feast, right? And that sense of the simplicity and nourishment of the everyday, with the feast being the space of beauty and connection.
Like,
those kinds of rhythms are totally lost, I think, in our culture. And it isn't just excessiveness. Like, I'm thinking of food channels, right? There's like, you know, banquets every day on there.
Like, you end up
trying to think like you need to cook like that all the time.
Right.
Right. If anyway, so I was just.
Well, people joke about food porn.
Food porn.
Right?
There's
that lust for food.
For food and good food and delicious food and, you know, feasting food that is totally excessive when you think about, you know, if you stop and reflect, that is so, so different from even the West about 50, 60 years ago, maybe, when things began to change. So we've just got a whole culture of pressure to eat in unhealthy ways, I think, and not intentional, not communal, but consistently holding up, you know, food as a kind of god, as you said, Bill, an idol.
Yeah. So in light of all of that, all of the ways that we are tempted to have an unhealthy relationship with food, what are some sort of practical steps or tips that we might sort of try to practice to redirect our relationship with food, to reorient it a bit? So you were just talking about feasting, and how feasting is good in moments, but it shouldn't be our everyday.
It's not our everyday.
Right? And so that makes me then think of like the opposite of feasting, which is fasting.
Yeah.
And I think fasting in Western culture right now, fasting often shows up as like a diet trend.
Yes.
As like, or like intermittent fasting or just like different things, which I'm not saying that's bad.
Nope.
Like that has its place. But I think fasting for a spiritual purpose and for with the mindset of like, okay, we're going to reorient our relationship to food in this moment. Right. And take the focus off of food.
Absolutely.
And off of body image.
Yes.
And reorient it to like, I'm fasting because I want to like put God in God's place and put food in food's place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why you should fast. Because I think there's a lot of people who fast maybe even for spiritual reasons, but they're still preoccupied by food, right? So when they're not eating, they're thinking of not eating.
Yeah.
And they're not necessarily taking that opportunity to kind of reorient their priorities. Mm-hmm. And so I'd encourage anyone who wants to try fasting that they when that hunger comes up is that they use that as a trigger to understand more not their hunger for food is all about, but what is their hunger for God all about?
Yeah.
And how can they reorientate that desire to from food to God and understanding more of filling the heart as opposed to filling the stomach.
Mm-hmm. So we have fasting. Are there other tips or things that we might say to help?
Gratitude.
Yeah. Okay.
I was going to say gratitude. You know, the times when we've practiced being grateful for food, I don't know whether it's just me, but it's certainly when I've cooked and put food on the table, it's easier to feel grateful.
It is, for sure.
Than if you shove something in, you know, that's already prepared and munch it down. And so, you know, practicing that gratitude just brings you intentionally to recognize food as the gift that it is and God as the giver of that gift that he is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it certainly slows you down instead of, I don't know, wolfing down whatever is put in front of you straight away without a thought. So I would say gratitude is one practice that we can. And as much as I know people have so many different health needs, so I want to say this with some caution, but as much as possible, like reach for the vegetables, reach for the fruits, reach for the things that help you inherently moderate. Like, they talk about the fact that if you put more vegetables on your plate, and chances of overeating,
right,
because you've got a whole lot of refined grains, are fewer, like, inherently,
right,
you know.
Right.
So if struggles with quantity are an issue,
yeah,
you know, instead of constantly obsessing about sizes,
yeah,
maybe some, you know, move towards the sorts of,
sure,
whole, if you can, fruits and vegetables, yeah, and things like that. Those are very practical things that I struggle to incorporate in my own life.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
not
a great suggestion
always successfully
on healthy eating.
Yeah,
and that reminds me, I forgot I was going to bring a big stack of cookies and just and just be eating a cookie,
oh,
just,
yeah,
like constantly,
yeah,
like cooking,
yes,
like one cookie after another as we're talking, and just like, oh yeah, okay, yeah,
yes, yes.
I thought it would be ironic, but I forgot to bring them.
It's unfortunate.
Yes.
We could probably find some cookies in the kitchen.
Probably could.
We just start at the beginning.
That's okay.
Again.
Yeah. I don't need to be eating cookies all through the podcast.
The other thing, like when you were talking about, you know, choosing vegetables, one of the things it's hard to do in Canada in the winter, but when you can, is like choosing food that, like, you know where it comes from.
Yeah.
Right? And it, you reestablish that connection. So all summer long, I will do my best. I don't always do great, but I will do my best to buy all of my produce at, like, farmers markets.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Right? Because,
yeah,
like, I want, yeah, to be able to say, okay, it's not just like, okay, this is a whole food. This is a whole food with a story.
Yes.
That I can, like, go and see, and I can build a relationship with the person who grew this food.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, just, like, reestablishing those connections,
yeah, yeah,
to the food. And then, ideally, consuming that food in connection with other people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, I know where this... I have this connection to the food. I have this connection to other people. And it just reorients those, like... This is,
yeah,
what food is really meant to be. It's, like, a yep, thing that brings us together, I,
mm-hmm,
think.
Yeah. And I think that is also one of the antidotes to gluttony is eating food together.
Yes.
So there is a communal... A community aspect to food. I mean, it's no mistake that, mm-hmm, Jesus took the Passover dinner,
yeah,
and made it into the Last Supper, where he shared with his disciples and others, and said, you know, this is my body, and this is my blood.
Yeah.
Because that was, it was an important aspect of life, is coming together to eat together. And then that turned into a life-giving, not on just on a physical level, but on a spiritual level.
Yeah.
And so there's this great analogy between actually eating a meal and share and partaking of the Lord's Supper or Eucharist or a Holy Communion in the service, mm-hmm, and it has some great connections there. And I just wanted to do a shout out for the community meal that we have here at Trinity,
yeah,
because,
yeah,
that also, it kind of, in terms of the reasons why we wanted to do it in the first place, is that we had identified a need in the community of people that were going hungry,
yeah,
but people that were also lonely. And so the community meal that we do each month at Trinity brings people in from the community. Many of the members of the church volunteer to help out to run the program, but we're bringing in people in the community who are facing food insecurity, who are facing social isolation,
mm-hmm,
and we're providing good food and a great environment, a great community, friendship. I think that. That is, you know, kind of in the face of,
yeah,
gluttony, right?
Yeah, yeah,
I mean, it's the community coming together to care for each other and to do that in relationship over a good meal.
Yeah.
I mean, that is,
yeah,
that's a cure-all,
yeah,
if anything else is. And
yeah,
I think, sure, I think we're, in the short time that we've been doing it, I think we've experienced a lot of really great benefits that have come out of that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I feel like we've ended up in this place that we come to again and again throughout,
yeah,
our conversations, which is that our sins and the antidotes to these sins are all about balance,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about, you know, the seven deadly sins are all about, you know, the things that we are trying to go for in place of God.
Yes.
And the antidotes to these sins, the things that help us, is bringing whatever it is, whether it's it's food or sex or money or power, bring that back into its proper place.
Yeah. And I think so, it's the balance. As when you talk about the balance, I was thinking, well, actually, it's about that reorientation towards God, right?
Yeah.
Recognizing the place, as you said, the place of these in relation there, and then recognizing how to avoid some of the insanities that happen when they take up the place of an idol
in
our lives.
So the answer really is Jesus.
It is Jesus.
We joke about that as a Sunday school thing,
I know, but the answer is Jesus.
The answer really is Jesus.
But it is, it's Jesus as creator, right? Yep. It's Jesus as savior. It's Jesus as someone.
As comforter, as friend,
as the one who shapes your identity, as the one who calls you to follow him and says his yoke is easier and his burden is lighter than carrying all the burdens of this world that you can exchange his following
and
him
Jesus
for.
Said he is the bread of life.
And he is the bread of life.
All the things. No, that's so good. So thank you for this conversation and for this whole series of conversations. I think this has been a really hopeful way to lean into some of the problems that we sometimes experience in our culture, but also the hope that is offered to us through the way of Jesus.
Well, thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Kyla. Yeah. Thanks, Bill.
And thank you for tuning in and listening to us throughout this whole conversation. I hope that you have also been able to find some moments of hope, some moments of ways to move forward and pursuing the way of Jesus, even amidst all of the challenges of this life. So we'll see you again next week.